This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour three, about 20 minutes in, and thanks to Dr. Dan Brown from Hallmark about the standing MRI. You know, it used to be that you'd really have to sedate the horse, and they'd have to go on a table. And so that's the innovation of being able just to walk them in and get them scanned that way. Lots of good... It's a real advance. And like we said, any horse that we can get out ahead of and keep him out of harm's way, that's invaluable. I think Andy's going to join us and talk about the Belmont weekend. Of course, the America's Day at the races has been also covering Churchill, and now Churchill wrapped up. They'll come back for their November meet, but plenty of action during the fall championship meet at Belmont Park. Was down there on Sunday. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. And still kind of in recap mode, but with this early draw for Preakness Saturday, I think a lot of people looking ahead, and tons of challenge races coming up at Belmont, but it was nice to be there at Belmont Sunday. Sorry I didn't see you.
I'm sorry, Steve. You're breaking up. I can't hear that well.
Huh. I just was saying it was fun to be at Belmont on Sunday. I'm sorry I didn't see you. We got a huge day coming up.
You could have seen me. I told you exactly where I was.
I know.
You're not
but
that
we...
sorry. How sorry are you? You could have walked up two flights of stairs and seen me.
I'm sorry.
I'm just checking. I can't go anywhere. I'm tied to a desk. You, on the other hand, were free running. But I'm sure you were busy. There's a lot going on. The carnival out back, all the different exhibits and everything. There was a lot going on.
I'm pretty sorry. I also had to go tour the hockey arena.
It's okay that you're not that sorry. But don't be sorry. You were sorry. You were sorry to come up and walk up the stairs.
I heard that
the elevators are working. You could have taken them.
Well, I heard.
Then you got to make that 30-yard walk. It's a lot. I get it. Tina could have carried you.
I've got reasonable excuses. Believe me, I do.
I'm fine. You're not sorry.
I'm sorry.
Okay. It's okay. I'm fine. But you're not sorry.
It provided.
You're walking the stairs.
It did provide you a chance to make fun of me on TV.
Not really. Brief. Wasn't that interesting.
It's so crazy. I mean, we get to the fall. And after Saratoga, the things shift and we start to look toward... the traditional fall season races and then Breeders' Cup as the coda to it. But... It's so strange to have this Preakness weekend in the middle of everything, and it's going to be another enormous Saturday between what's going on in Baltimore and then Belmont, the huge weekend ahead.
I'll say one good thing about the Preakness being there. It gave a couple more 2-year-old stakes in the turf, so maybe a couple more horses will have the ability to get into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. I wonder how many Euros will come this year, so that might even be better. It is a little strange. I agree. It's funny. I think that was an article that Andy wrote saying that we should change the Triple Crown now for this thing. I'm going to tell you, from a business standpoint, that would clearly be incorrect.
Yes.
So... I'm not sure why, because the Triple Crown series was altered because of the pandemic this year, that shows we should change it. I was surprised. I didn't read Andy's article. I saw it in our notes, but I was a little surprised to see that. And it's not an opinion I agree with.
No.
He says, Paul is reported. Byers, I don't read the Stipulated Late Series. I should probably read it, but I don't agree.
No, I don't either. There's a certain harmony and flow to what, I mean, it just sets up the whole year, really, Triple Crown. I mean, there's just, I'm surprised to hear that.
I'm just reading some of the things he apparently said on a podcast or something, or a radio network or something. He's not wrong, but, you know, I mean, part of the problem is that, you know, it used to be that horses ran so more frequently, both as two-year-olds but also as three-year-olds before the Triple Crown races, that the horses were prepared better to perform at a higher level in the Triple Crown races. We just don't see that anymore. Horses come in to the Derby very, very much unfinished. And obviously things were somewhat different this year. But I don't know. I don't care that much about it. I think one of the problems is the economics of the way it's been in the past are such that to ask the tracks to move them and dramatically alter the economics isn't going to make sense financially for racing. And racing depends on economics for a lot of things to happen. You know, nothing happens in isolation. Everything's part of the ecosystem.
Yes.
And I mean, I can't, you know, I understand there's a difference between Churchill Downs, the corporation, they have investors, and the New York Racing Association, which is not for profit, where, you know, we're going to return anything and everything that we make it back into racing. But in order for a racing product to exist at a high level and to be able to fund any projects that we're doing, I mean, obviously there's other sources of revenue, but, you know, keeping the money in racing is an important aspect. And, you know, the profits generated from the Belmont Stakes Day, you know, much like Saratoga, are a big part of what keeps us going.
Well, I thought we had this conversation, you know, going back to before, you know, before American Pharoah. You had the whole, you know, this whole silly discussion. Oh, it's too hard. It's got to change it. It's,
there's different discussions about it. One of them is, you know, the too hard thing is nonsense. A horse is always somewhere around 8-1 with a Triple Crown or something, 8-10-1, maybe less. All it is one horse has to win two races. That's a, you know, it's just a mathematical equation, you know, including injuries and such. But that's a different discussion. And I think what Andy, you know, I get off the briefing of Andy saying, and he makes a valid point, which is that horses just aren't as prepared going to Derby as they used to be. So it's not the same as it was even 25 years ago. These horses come in fairly raw into the Triple Crown series, and that's understandable. And maybe that contributes to their lack of longevity to so many horses that perform are asked to do a lot, you know, without preparation they once had. But there's also the economics of it. And these conversations have always, from what I've noticed, have always ignored the economics of changing the Triple Crown. For instance, I don't really know that the Preakness would get the same crowd that it, on the first week or so of June. Well, I mean, you know, I think we're talking about pushing it forward. Timing is important, right? We're not going to get the same crowd in Belmont Stakes Day on July 4th weekend that we would get in the first weekend in June. You're not. You know, it's an evolution. It's changing. So there's a lot more at play than just, you know, what would make the series, I don't even know, best. What about the Triple Crown we've had for 5 weeks of excitement hasn't worked?
Right. Right. And you know, the other part of it is that you've also got the calendar and the structure. I mean, everybody's made right. the most of things, but there's also the whole flow of all the other divisions that are
right. You're right. Well, but even 3-year-olds, Oakland's not going to extend their meet. Keeneland's going to run in April. You know, these You're talking about, you're going to alter all of these preps. You're going to tell fairgrounds that they're Louisiana Derby and Risen Stars and things are 3 months before the Triple Crown. You know, there's a whole lot of things in place. I mean, it's a discussion. I get it. I think from what I'm reading from what Andy said, I think his points are reasonably valid in that. But it's about how people are preparing them for the Triple Crown. And it is a fair point that we're keeping, I don't want to use the word antiquated, we're sticking to something that we've been using for many years, and people have begun preparing their horses in a very different manner. That's something I understand, but I don't think that's changing the nature, the flow of these races, Triple Crown. I mean, I guess, you know, you could run the Derby and then maybe run the Preakness 3 weeks later, then the Derby 3 weeks after that, and have another week. I don't know, you know, but Triple Crown is tough because it's tough because of the nature of the way it's set up. It presented a very different dynamic this year, where you're asking horses to stay sound for a longer period of time and face sort of newer faces that they wouldn't have faced had it been run in the past way. And not surprisingly, it didn't work out for Tis the Law, even though so many people thought it was a fait accompli. But that's a different discussion. And any new situation presents a different challenge.
Yeah. Well, the challenge here continues to be the winning toward or racing toward and preparing for Breeders' Cup. And this weekend, let's get into a few results, not just limited to Belmont either, but I know there's one horse when it comes when it comes to Firenze Fire. There's a horse that after he retires, they're going to wish that there had been a Breeders' Cup sprint at Belmont because, boy, he...
I don't know. I'm going to tell you, I don't agree with that narrative. I know it's all anybody ever says, loves Belmont. I don't know. I think that dismisses that he's just a good horse. He's run... The second best figure he ran this year was in Saratoga. He's run big figures at Aqueducts. I don't agree with the narrative that he loves Belmont. I just don't. I'm sorry. I know most people disagree with me, and I keep hearing that, and we keep saying on the show, I don't agree with it. I think he's a good horse.
Nobody's arguing that he isn't a good horse, quote unquote.
Constant, they wish it was at Belmont. Really? How's he done at Belmont when he's been against better fields? He's lost.
Well,
I don't agree with it. I just don't.
Yeah.
And a lot of those races at Belmont were for Jason Service, who's currently under indictment for using performance-enhancing drugs. So, frankly, I don't want to take his performances at Belmont at face value until Kelly Breen got him.
All right. Well, he has won... He's won two grade twos in five starts.
He did. And his buyer figure, the second best one he ran, was in Saratoga.
In the Vandy. That's fair.
I'm not saying I think he's a very good horse. And the point is, I think saying he's a Belmont horse takes away, it creates, let's take a look at some of his races, you know? I mean, I'm bringing up his PPs right now.
He ran very well at Saratoga.
He ran a 103 buyer in last year's Breeders' Cup sprint, the exact same buyer he ran in the Vosburgh. He ran 100 in Penn National in the Fabulous Strike. He ran a 102 in the General George. Where is the proof, if you actually look through his PPs, that he's a better horse at Belmont than he is at other tracks? There just isn't that proof of that.
Well, five, except...
Forgo last year. I understand he has wins. I get it. But wins don't necessarily mean the performances were better than his losing performances. I mean, let's get rid of that ridiculous Dwyer. And by the way, they're unhappy. Those were all Jason Service blow-ups, you know? Got a 98 when he won the Gallant Bob as a three-year-old at Parks, which at that time was the second-best figure I believe he ever ran.
I've got the last 12...
If you go through his lifetime PPs, he has run as well, if not better, at other racetracks than he has at Belmont. It's a fact. I believe in speed figures, and I know you do too.
Yeah.
And the speed figures don't suggest that he's a better horse at Belmont Park for the most part.
He just wins
he's
more
just
often
a good
at Belmont. No, I no doubt. And I think you could also argue that, you know, the wet, he's not a horse that likes it wet. That appears to be.
And it seems as he's gotten older to like it even less, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So I would agree with that. You know, I don't think he was horrendous on it early in his career. I mean, frankly, he didn't run that badly the Derby at 1.25 miles. You know, I mean, I think he lost the Derby because he was sloppy. I shouldn't say he ran poorly, but should I say he lost because he was sloppy, or it was 1.25 miles, or a combination of both? You know, it's not like he ran so well in the Wood Memorial before that. Basically, he's more of a sprinter. You know, that's when he got better. I mean, his Sanford was a good race, his second career start.
I know everybody loves
that thing, that point. I don't believe. I believe if you dissect his PPs, that he has wins at Belmont. But, by the way, outside of Belmont, he's 7-for-21.
Well, and I was going to say, you know what might feed into this, Andy, a little bit? Is just the fact of that, you know, the Belmont races come on either side of Saratoga, and so it feels like it's a little bit more pronounced than when you go back to last year when he actually ran okay in the Met, and you know, then the Vanderbilt and the Forgo, you know, were not great. Then he came back and ran a bang up race in the Vosburgh.
Forgo was fine. He ran second in Matola.
Yeah. Yep, beaten three.
I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at his PPs, and I just don't see that he's so superior at Belmont. I think, you know, people talk about surface. I always thought, and it doesn't make me right, but like, you know, horses that love Saratoga. I always thought maybe it was horses that just flourished getting up to Saratoga, not the racing surface, you know?
Well, Andy, it's more than surface. It's also configuration. You know, the horses.
Yeah, sure, but that, I don't think Belmont's configuration is so much more favorable to him than others. I'm just looking at his VPs, and they do not make a strong argument that he runs his best rate. His good rate is only at Belmont. That his best rate because he's got. I'll put it this way: let's look at his buyer speed figures of over 100 triple digit buyers. He has 6 of them. 1, 2, 3 of them will run at Belmont. One was run at Santa Anita, one at Penn National, and one at Laurel.
Right. And he does run, this was his 8th out of 29 starts at Belmont.
I mean, he's 5-for-8. He obviously has done well in Belmont races, but I don't really think there's this huge argument. I just think he's a good, honest horse. And when the circumstances are fair, he runs a good race. The truth of him is that he's more than often than not that he's just been a little wanton when he's been in Grade One company.
That's true. That's true. That's been out of his reach. I agree.
Now, I mean, who are the favorites right now for the Breeders' Cup Sprint?
Well,
it's a pretty nebulous group. CZ Rocket, him, who else? Yalpon, if he runs big on Thursday,
right in the Chick Lang.
I mean, who are they, right?
Yeah, it's not...
Who's running the Phoenix on Friday? That been drawn yet?
Keeneland draws today, I think.
Yeah, it does. You know, it definitely draws today. Sometimes Keeneland draws kind of early. The PPs are, though. I mean, I'm trying to think. I guess Whitmore?
Whitmore, definitely. He dances every dance.
I'm just trying. I mean, what was the best sprint we ran in America this year? Probably the Count Fleet.
There's a lot of races that,
Right? I mean, that may have been the toughest, most competitive sprint race, at least 6 furlong race we've run all year. I think Nick made a point about that on Twitter the other day, and I was thinking about it. And he's right.
There, you know, it's funny. I meant to bring this. I had Jay earlier, and you bring up Oaklawn. And on April 11th, in the 9th and 11th race, you had Tom's the Tot and Improbable, and in the
CZ Rocket.
The 11th was the Oaklawn Stake for the 3-year-olds that they had created
with Mr.
Big News.
Yeah,
and Basin was 4th. It's pretty crazy.
No, Oakland had some terrific races. No question about that.
And fold in the Phillies, too. You know who we got to bring into this conversation with Firenze Fire, who got another opportunity on him. They won on the Gravesend. Jose Lascano, who has you talked about him extensively over the summer, and he's riding as well as I think anybody's ever seen him ride.
No, I agree. Well, it's funny, I've always thought Jose was a very good rider. I think in some cases he lacked some consistency and he lacked opportunity.
Yes.
When he decided to stay in New York a couple of winters ago, it really changed his career. Because not only did he win a lot of races, but it gave him a chance to ride more people, and I think it opened people's eyes up to that being a good rider. And his business carried over. He had a great year that year in New York. He finished like one behind Manny Franco. He and Manny Franco were, I think, one win apart, the best top, most wins in New York. I don't remember exactly who finished first. But I really thought this summer in Saratoga, he really came alive, especially in the latter half of the meet. You know, so many people were focusing on Luis Saez, and understandably, he was riding incredibly well and winning races. But I think Jose was also riding extremely well. And much like Luis Saez, he's more aggressive. He's thoughtful, and I think he's looking to be aggressive in races. And there are examples of that at Belmont, even going back to the spring and summer. I think about a claiming race he won for a horse that Mott used to have when he went to lead on the turf race when nobody else wanted to lead. I think one of the things he's doing is looking to be, to be forward if he can. My Heart Belongs to Daddy, who's not a speed type, who suddenly he got not aggressive with, but he wasn't unaggressive with it. It ended up falling into an easy lead in a race earlier in the meet, and then it translated into a sort of odd stakes win later in the meet. But I agree. I think Jose's ridden very well. I think the Colony itself is riding very, very well. Joel Rosario, in my opinion, I've always felt that Joel was a great rider, but I think this year he's had more consistency this year than I've ever seen from the New York. He just seems like day in and day out. There were times with Joel when you might wonder he didn't ride as well today or, and such. That's not the case at all anymore. I mean, he delivers one good ride after another in Belmont, and New York is such a great circuit for him because of the abundance of turf races. And I don't believe there's a better turf rider than him in the country. I think he's as good a turf rider as you'll ever see. There's a lot. I mean, I don't mean that to say the exclusion of others. Jose's ridden the turf course well, and I say both Jose's. Jose Ortiz is riding it very, very well. I think, seeing Jose, who had that injury in Florida, I think it took him a little while to maybe get completely healthy. But starting it, I want to say Belmont, maybe a few weeks into the meet, I just think he's ridden terrifically since, he probably got himself sort of back at full strength. And he's been great. I think, one of the benefit of these guys all riding so well, and I believe this is as strong and solid and deep a riding colony as we've ever had, is that you're not often thinking, ugh, what rider did I get stuck with here? You just generally feel that there's a reasonable chance that your horse will probably lose, but it'll actually be hard for you to find a reason to blame the jockey for your bad pick. there are less and less opportunities for us to blame riders, which is disappointing to me at one level, but I kid, but ultimately very satisfying. The more good riders, the better for racing.
Well, with Lascano for a minute, a couple of notes on that Saturday card. Firenze Fire, obviously, but you made, by the way, a tremendous pick with that big engine for Linda Rice, and he rode that horse.
Well, yeah, that was a great ride.
Unbelievable.
A reasonably good pick, but my pick looked a lot better because of the ride he gave the horse. And I think all of it, if you think about it, it's really a great example of the line that MIG has pushed for so many years, and I don't think there's a more insightful concept than Richie's getting your position going forward. I think I've learned a lot from Richie over the years, but I would say that if someone were to say what's the best thing phrase that Richie ever coined or best concept he ever came up with, and I will totally credit him with this because he's been saying this to me for as long as I've known him, which is over 25 years, be getting your position going forward, and that's exactly what Jose did aggressively with that horse. He sent Big Engine out of the gate. He made Kendrick have to run just enough with Tribeca but also it allowed him to get that good position doing that. It was all because of his aggressive riding and getting his position going forward. So, yeah, no, I agree. That was a terrific ride, a better ride than a pick.
He also, you know, and I'm actually looking at the winner's book at DRF, and one thing that you're getting with Lascano, you're invariably getting paid. He was on short poor.
He's not riding a lot for the trainers that take a lot of money, right? How often is he riding for Chad Brown? How often is he riding for Shug? How often is he riding for Kristoff? You know, the trainers with horses, you know, have been taking a lot of the money. He doesn't ride that frequently for them. And that's what makes his winning more impressive, you know?
Yep.
And to be fair, and I don't really get along with his agent, but Jason's done a great job, you know, patching getters now. It obviously helps when Jose's riding better, but they don't have some sort of in with the, I mean, Linda's probably the trainer they ride for the most, and
he's riding very
that much. He's riding more because he's winning. So they're doing a great job of being successful without having, you know, a lot of layups. Not a lot of layups in his entries.
He's very few. Very few favorites. If you go through his list of winners the last few weeks, and he's in with Mark Hennig's. Mark's using him a lot. Maker is using him as well. How about that traipsing at 13-1?
Who?
Traipsing.
Yeah, I do that. That was stupid. I used Orson Zachary's. Well, I mean, he went the lead. He knew it was a paceless race. And he went the lead. And he wired the field. And the favorite was complete no-show, unfortunately, for me. But, yeah. No, he's ridden well. The evidence is not just in the results, but, you know, or more than the results, I should say.
You know, I got to bring up with you. You and I didn't talk about it off air at all. On Saturday, we were still driving down, and I'm watching, and I played the. I got beat up again in the cross country, but I put up a tweet, Andy. I said, I didn't get the memo about Breadman. He opened at 5-2 and never moved.
Well, you could see he was a first time starter for John Terranova. Memo, it's not. And that's more about horses that have already run. And that horse was clearly bet in doubles, and you're paying attention, you use them. That's all. And that's not a. I mean, I you know, whatever. He was clearly bet. No question about it. He got bet and he ran. And I bet the second horse who got a great ride, you know, Manny did the right thing. He went to the front. He didn't go super fast. He ran his winning race. He buried the rest of the field, but Breadman was just better than him. It's not like anybody else closed him there.
Exactly. Exactly. And speaking of
particularly fast race, but 0-4 race usually don't.
Speaking of coming from off the pace, Villadera and Rosario and beats the stable.
Well, I mean, he won that race because of the wicked pace set in there. And you know, with all due respect, it was a fabulous ride by Joel Rosario. And that horse needed an incredible ride by Joel. And a wild pace scenario, and the horse who finished second, Blowout, was about 1,000 lengths the best. And even the third place finisher for Tony Dutrow in there, that filly, the mare that always runs well. They ran the best two races. Theodera was third best, but the combination of Joel's ride and the wicked pace, you just set it up for that horse. And at best, that horse was third best. The diamond clear that horse ran better than the fourth place finisher. Yes, Theodera won, but. It doesn't take a lot to figure out the best race was run by Blowout.
Yeah, the top contenders there were that was a good race. That was a good addition of that. That's Chad's fifth straight Noble Damsel win.
Yeah, he's actually now tied Clement for who had 5 wins in the Noble Damsel. But he's won 5 straight. Yeah, and 2 of them went on to win the Matriarch, right? Uni and Off Limit.
Well, and I think these two, Chad said, I think they're both, he's looking
they're
toward a Matriarch.
Yeah.
Yeah. With
we
this pair. No. No.
Yeah,
no. Although.
Cold when I went there that weekend.
Oh, is that right?
When I went in 16? Yeah, it was cold. Yeah, because the sun, it was kind of like Belmont, where the sun wasn't hitting the seating area in the afternoon, so it would be chilly. And I remember at night, it was chilly. It was beautiful, but it was chilly.
How was the driving? How was the rental car situation for you that trip?
I wouldn't know.
You didn't have to drive?
I took an Uber to and from the San Diego airport, and they had a shuttle that went to and from the racetrack.
Awesome. Nice. So you didn't have to. All right, because I should have realized that because I didn't hear from you. Usually when it's one of my favorite.
I got right out of cars. No, it was actually nice. I went to have dinner at Pete Bradley at a place around the corner from where I was staying at the nice hotel of L'Auberge. It's a little cheaper in November than it is in the summer, and I went and I had a nice time actually. I had fun. But it wasn't warm. It was warmer than New York City, but it wasn't warm.
No, you could see that. That makes sense.
Dinner with Jay one night. No, it was nice. It was nice. It was, I had a good time. And at the time, won the Hollywood Derby, so that was all good.
Well, and of course, we'll be back there next year for Breeders' Cup, back to Del Mar.
Maybe I'll go.
So, there you go.
I was going to go to England this year.
Oh, and you had, that's right, that's right. You said you had.
I was going to go, but I'm not going to go now.
When was the last time you were there? You used to go every year.
England? Well, no. I was there in 15 for Fox. I was going to go to Keeneland in April. I had reservations at Old Trip Land.
But there was a time. Wasn't there a time when you used to go regularly to Keeneland?
Well, yeah, in the old days, before I had a job. I mean, mid-90s, I used to rent a place and go there for the whole meet.
Nice.
And then I continued to go for a week or, every year. But I think the last time I went, a couple times, in the 2000s, in that decade. But I went only when I did the shows for Fox. I love going. If there was a vaccine and everything was back to some sense of normalcy, I'd love to go in April. But my best guess is that April 22 will be the next appearance there. I love going to horse farms. Nice there. Yeah. Love it in the spring. See all the foals in the field. It's really nice.
Well, we'll be heading there soon enough for Breeders' Cup week.
You're going? Over.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
Regrettably?
I can't go to Baltimore. I was going to leave actually today for 3 days, but I got the eye thing on Thursday.
So. Well, I don't think Baltimore would have been as fun this year.
No.
How could you go to the Preakness without the after Preakness party?
Or the functions, all the great functions leading up.
Can't go to Mount Washington Tavern. Very depressing.
No, that was another regular Andy Serling.
You have the Arabian race after the Preakness. There is that.
There is the Arabians. A couple of things. We got about 3 minutes to close out the morning. What was your impression, before I ask you, but looking ahead this weekend, what was your impression of Improbable and what went on in the...
I'm shocked at the difference in prices, even though maximum security sort of has to be favored.
Right.
At face value, I wouldn't want any part of maximum security going forward, but I've always been a bit of a skeptic. I was talking to Jay yesterday, and Jay had written and talking about how he thought that he brought, maybe wasn't, maybe coming to this race the same way he had for other races, so maybe it's not as surprising. I don't know. I think at this point, you have to say the best older horse in the country in distances is Improbable. Yes, he had the benefit of Tom Zaytoff blowing the brake and a very soft trip in the Whitney, but he delivered. And, he ran that big race in Santa Anita. And in this race, I just crushed. So it seems like Improbable has developed into the horse that a lot of people thought he was as a three-year-old. And he was the favorite in the Derby. It's not as though, he didn't have credentials. And he's kind of always his own worst enemy with his bad behavior at the gate. But if he behaves in the gate and breaks, he would have won the Pennsylvania Derby if he had broken last year. He's gotten really good. So heading to the Breeders' Cup, I think he has to be considered the horse to beat in the Classic. I don't take Tis the Law for granted. I'm curious to see what Global Campaign does. I'd love to see him run well in there. But I think it's reasonable to be skeptical about maximum security going forward. And the other thing about maximum security is, how confident are you that he can win a race like that if he's not able to control? And with the presence of Global Campaign at the very least, how the heck is he going to control?
I asked that of Baffert yesterday. I said, don't you get the sense that that he really kind of needs things his own way? Although you would think, Andy, that he would benefit more at the mile and a quarter pace early than what transpired. I mean,
yeah, but I don't see this pace as being particularly tepid. And let me ask another question. If what's his name, Authentic, runs well this weekend,
yeah,
he would be,
yeah,
running.
Yeah.
And I don't think Bob is the, you know, I Bob can trade both those horses, but Authentic is an absolute need to lead type horse.
Yes, he is.
How can you justify rating him? And I don't think Bob's looking to rate him to help maximum security. Not as though is the few guys that ever did things like that, you know? His horses run well. One of the reasons he's been successful at dirt is he's completely unafraid of being aggressive. So I don't think Maximum Security is nearly as fast as Authentic early. It's not like Maximum Security has shown himself to be some blisteringly fast horse early.
No, he's a grinded out. He's a metronomic kind of a. He just kind of goes along, but he.
And I think if you're the connections and you're Coolmore, as far as his stud career, he's proven that he could win big races and run well outside of Jason Service's barn, which I think for his stud value has to be considered a very important factor. So they've already proven that. So the question is, what are they going to do going forward in the Classic? That's one of the reasons I wouldn't be 100% sure we'll even see him there. Maybe I would assume we will, but you never know, you know.
No, based on Baffert yesterday, he had no compunction. He didn't sound iffy by any stretch.
Well, I mean, I don't think Bob's looking to not run him.
I see what you mean. I'm not
saying it wouldn't happen, but you know, it's not like those decisions don't get made sometimes.
That's true. That is true. Before we wrap, Andy, we've got about 30 seconds. Here's the music. Want to let everybody know. The Belmont Derby, the Gallant Bloom, the Joe Hirsch, the Kelso, the Pilgrim.
Thank you. I feel much better that you did that.
Got to get that. What's on Sunday, by the way?
The Beldame, the Miss Grillo, and there's one other race.
Is there a turf sprint?
Yeah, the Belmont Turf Sprint. Very good. Dunbar Road's coming back in the Beldame.
Nice.
Yeah. That's all. Am I done?
You are done. I'm done, too.
It really matters to me.
Andy Serling, everybody. The one and only. We had kind of a leisurely morning, actually, between... We never got to Kelly. I feel badly. All right. But I owe Kelly bringing a call. But Ashley Mayo, don't forget Prince of Wales today. Fort Erie. Make sure you tune in. 5:37. Fort Erie website for Ashley's. I'll retweet her link. I'm going with Cassie. 12-1. Bold victory. And a little... And a little bit of dotted line at 8-1. So make it a 6-3 for me. Jay Pribman, of course, Daily Racing Form, DRF Pribman. And Dr. Dan Brown from Hallmark Veterinary Imaging with the system at Santa Anita. Really good. Enjoyed that. That was Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And Andy, thanks to Case on the board. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock. If you missed anything, replay. 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM or at the website, podcasts, nice and smooth. We got that going good, and the archive in a little bit, or streaming too. Thanks, everybody. Good luck today. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, The Best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.